This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now, let's take a look at this next story. It's about Guru Dukulara, or essentially unhappy teachers. It's a term that's coined by teachers themselves to describe the suffering teachers that are separated from their spouses as a result of their placement. They are physically very distant from their loved ones, and the consequences are not just financial, but physical and emotional as well.
So those who couldn't get placements in the same districts and states as their spouses said they had to suffer miscarriages, divorce, depression and financial hardship. Some have even become suicidal. One teacher they spoke to even considered jumping off a building. So families of these teachers also suffer. Their children are left under the care of grandparents or their spouses, essentially forcing them to raise their children as single parents.
Yeah, this is, we're getting into the details. You know, if you have conversations with any teacher, if you have relatives, friends who have been in the education industry for quite some time, especially in the public sector, there are huge sacrifices that are being made to ensure that everybody gets a fair shake, especially the students, right? But at the same time, it comes at a cost in terms of the requirements that are done. And as we spoke, some folks are separated because of their placement. The Star spoke to one couple with four children who have been separated for 6 years. One spouse is in Kedah and the others in Kuala Lumpur. They said they did not know how much longer they could cope. Thousands of such teachers nationwide wait eagerly for the transfer website called
EG2CAR
to open so that they can apply again and again. For many, it's an annual affair. It takes many years and begging through many different channels for these transfers to be approved.
Teachers said they knew of cases which never got approved. In these cases, teachers retired or quit teaching altogether as to be nearer to their spouses and children. And on the end of the education ministry, they've claimed that they are trying their best to post teachers to the same district or state, but that's hard to achieve because of the need for certain types of teachers in certain areas.
Yeah, it's really difficult being a civil servant, more so a teacher. You know, teachers often find themselves in this predicament because it's very, very difficult. And if they are suffering through such hardship, the question then, what is in the current ecosystem that allows for it and what can be done to improve it? When we talk about teaching, it's always with this tinge of how teachers always to be quite self-sacrificial. There's so many of these elements where, they've put so much on themselves at the cost of their own family and loved ones.
And it's not only the pressure that I guess the teachers put on themselves, but overall, when it comes to talking about teachers, is that, oh, well, teachers should be doing this. Teachers should also be kind of replacing the role of parents. So I think
it's a huge ask.
And I think that narrative really needs to change, right? And we need to improve the living situation of teachers so that they can be better for our kids. You know, teaching should not always be construed as this thing that, well, teachers are heroes, teachers are lifesavers, teachers are saving my child's life, one child at a time. But when you work under such, I guess, distasteful conditions, that doesn't help.
Well, check out the exclusive by The Star. We're going to hear from Harry Tan, the Secretary General of the NUTP. That's coming up right after this. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition. It's BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
And, of course, it's Calvin and Ezra on the Evening Edition. We're still talking about that Star exclusive, some of the challenges and that have been placed by teachers as a result of being separated from their spouses, primarily due to the issue of placement. And so those who couldn't get their respective placements in the same districts or states as their spouses, of course, experience a variety of things, depression, divorce, miscarriages, financial hardship. We're going to find out a little bit more about the perspective of this from Harry Tan, the Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession. Harry, thank you for joining us on the Evening Edition. Tell us, what are your thoughts on the transfer process for teachers and essentially the difficulties that they face?
Well, this is a very complex issue, and we strongly support the ministry's efforts to try to resolve this issue as it involves the lives of human beings. But at the same time, they are professionals, they are teachers. They need to be deployed where they are needed the most.
All right, but in the first place, could you perhaps explain how the application process teachers need to go through and how that works?
All right. Starting this year, the teachers only need to fill in the transfer request online, and the transfer process is now currently open. All right, they call it the e-tukar. So if the application is successful, the teacher will be transferred in the month of June. If the request is turned down, then his name will automatically be forwarded for the next exercise due in January 2020. All right, so if the teacher were to miss this chance, that means the next time he can put in his application for any for the transfer process will be next year. So in the application, they will ask the applicant's state of service that he wants to go to, and also the district education that he or she wishes to go to. Then the applicant also has to state that if, let's say, his first choice of state is not successful, would he want to go to the second choice? For example, his first choice could be Kelantan, and his second choice could be Terengganu. All right, then in that form, the teacher's data will be also required, his academic qualification and his option, and also how long he has been in service and his experience in the schools that he has taught in. All right, then the application also require the spouse information and, of course, the reason for transfer. And finally, all this information must be confirmed by the head of department.
Now, talk to us, why is it so hard for teachers to be posted close to their homes and then to be transferred?
Now, first of all, we have to look at the system of the place of work. The place of work where certain teachers are needed, certain options are needed, may normally do not match the places that the new teachers want to go. All right? So they are normally in rural areas or, you know, in states whereby not many people want to be there. So this is a place where there is a critical shortage of teachers. So now, the teachers who are already in those places, most of them are not local to the area. So they want to get out. But the new teachers are not going in or do not want to go to those areas. So therefore, there is a mismatch, and the ministry cannot entertain each and everyone who wants a transfer, because then we will be very unfair to our students, our clients. So that they have to strike a balance between the transfers and also the needs of the school and the children. So that is where the problem lies. At the end of the day, there are also some other reasons that may follow. For example, you say that the spouse must follow the husband. Now, let's say if the husband is teaching in the interiors of Sarawak, and the spouse is teaching, let's say, in a town in Kelantan. So the wife may not want to follow the husband. The husband may want to come back to the wife's place. So this will be a problem. Nobody wants to go to the interior areas. Everybody wants to come to town. Another one is that, let's say the husband is teaching in Sarawak, the wife is in Kelantan, and the vacancies are in Johor. Would the husband and wife want to teach together in Johor? There is also another problem again. And then there is also the problem of single teachers who want to go back to their hometowns, but they can't because they are not married. And there comes another vicious circle. Since they are not married, their points awarded for them to go out may not be so high as another teacher who is married. So these are some of the human problems that the ministry is facing, and we strongly support the ministry's efforts to try to resolve all these human problems.
Does the NUTP provide any support to teachers regarding this matter? And going forward, will any action be taken to support teachers facing this issue?
Yes, we do provide support for bona fide cases for senior teachers who have time and again have their application rejected. You know, we have cases where teachers have been, the application has been rejected for numerous reasons. And then once we forward them to the ministry, and then they normally will allow them to be transferred, like, if the case is genuine. We are fairly comfortable with the process now, and we find that the ministry is being very fair and open on this matter. But of course, there are certain other issues that sometimes the ministry has to be addressed. It's not only following the spouse. For example, we also have cases of single teachers who have been serving in the area, in certain areas for a long time, and they say that if they are serving in a rural area, and you know, the chances of them getting hitched or married will be dim. So after 10 years or so, they also chance to be transferred out of the, you know, the places to a place where they are, you know, I mean, if I may use the word, more marketable.
What do you think needs to be done to address this issue?
To us, we need to relook the whole intake process of new teachers. We must ensure a balance of gender. And not only a balance of gender, but also a quota from each state in Malaysia. Why is that there are so many teachers from a particular state, and certain states, like they are facing a critical shortage of teachers, like for example, Johor. Are there no one from Johor who wants to be a teacher? So if you have teachers from the particular state, then the problem of migration of teachers here and there will be reduced. So in short, we propose that the whole system of sourcing of new teachers must be relooked and taken and take into account all these factors that, you know, or migration or teachers wanting to get transfers between states and following the spouses and so on and so forth.
Well, Harry, thank you very much for sharing all of that perspective with us. That was Harry Tan, Secretary General of the National Union of the Teaching Profession, or NUTP. Now, we're going to be speaking about this particular matter to Zamir Zulkifli, co-founder of Teach for Malaysia. Zamir, thanks for joining us on the evening edition. Now, of course, with Teach for Malaysia, there's so much of this that you're very, very familiar with when it comes to placing talented young teachers in districts that require a lot of support when it comes to these aspects. What are your thoughts on the transfer process for teachers and the difficulties that they face?
Yeah, I think from Teach for Malaysia's experience, just speaking as an observer that's just been working within the system and not a policymaker. So there, the process itself is very, very centralized and tedious, of course, just because of the way our system is worked out. And I would like to state that there are both pros and cons towards a centralized as well as a decentralized system, right? So because we have a centralized system, we make sure that the needs of children are evenly met and spread out throughout the system. Because a decentralized, free market approach to talent being able to move wherever they are, there will definitely be a mismatch between what the students need and where the adults want to work and live.
Zamir, we spoke earlier about the topic of Guru Dukalara, and I guess what kind of conversations do teachers have around this particular topic?
Yeah, so it's a very common topic, especially around the period of transfers, which happens twice a year. And it's a mixed bag. You have those that say, hey, your job is... We signed up and our job is to be teacher, so we got to be willing. And this is Malaysia where it's a centralized system, so we have to accept that. And then there are others that says, like, look, I've served my time. I want to go back. But what's interesting is that there's always talk about certain states having more of their citizens, so people from their state becoming teachers. So therefore, there's a surplus. And then certain states, for example, Johor is a very famous place that there's a growing population of students, but not many people sign up that are from Johor that want to be teachers. And I suspect there's also like economic opportunities in a particular state as well play a big role in that.
So it seems like a lose-lose situation here, right? These teachers are sent to areas where they're needed the most because we lack teachers. But on the other hand, there are cases of teachers retiring or quitting altogether because they couldn't be transferred from these areas that are far from where they want to be. So we're short on teachers and circumstances are causing them to quit their profession. Mm. What's your reaction to this?
There's actually currently in Malaysia, there's an oversurplus of education graduates that are applying to be teachers. And then because it's a centralized system, they need to look at where are the teachers, how many teachers do we have in the whole system, and then where are they distributed. Now, if the process was running on its own, obviously, then there will be equal and proper distribution. But because then there are like special exemptions or sometimes even someone's appointed a role and asked to transfer, also then doesn't want to transfer, there's then a mismatch. And then you've got a problem of also schools where there's a declining student population, and but the because of our existing policies, the number of teachers or the headcount in that school needs to remain. I think in the past, I remember a case of like 12 teachers who were put to a school for about 3 or 4 students only. So you got like that sort of like mix thrown in. So at the back of it, it's what do we want to prioritize as a society? Is it teachers or student needs? And then what level do we want to go about managing the talent and supporting the talent? I do think the fact that our teachers are civil servants is also a challenge in it, where we then can't think of more innovative ways to manage and approach the talent perspective, where it doesn't have to be only a centralized or a decentralized approach. We can have a staggered approach to that. So I'm actually a proponent of head teachers having a bit more autonomy to pick and choose. But we need to couple that with allowing greater rewards for teachers that choose or that need to work in more rural and underprivileged areas.
Zamir, of course, Teach for Malaysia was founded on the premise to essentially address these specific areas or territories that are in need of teachers. You know, from your perspective or from your insight, do the teachers from Teach for Malaysia feel the same way about being sent far away from home?
It's really depending on what expectations we set, right? So Teach Malaysia very clearly calls out that our mission is to serve in underprivileged areas. We have had to, we do have trouble recruiting and scaling because we set this expectation that this is going to be an adventure. You're going to go and you're going to see different parts of Malaysia. And unfortunately, only a certain group or demographic can do that, right? Typically single, not many financial commitments just of yet. We lose out on recruiting a lot of talent that either has to support their parents, elderly parents or sickly parents. Of course, there's an exemption that they are able to work through it, but generally we struggle to scale because of this challenge. And we always have this debate, like, are we looking for great teachers or are we here to serve the needs of the children? And typically, thankfully, we lean on the student priority.
Right. And going back to the story, so what kind of support would you like to see for these teachers posted away from home?
I think basic either hardship allowances or distance allowances, traveling allowances as well to make true. I also do think a bit more of a flexible working arrangement or working style should be given, right? So it'll probably, could they across the whole team, right? So could there be a rotation system among the teachers if they're able to manage the headcount and manage the school classroom sizes where 3 weeks you're teaching and 1 week you get to travel back home. This is in extremely rural areas as well. So it's just thinking about that sort of approaches that have worked in, I think, lessons that we can learn in oil rig operations. There is a shift sort of approach to it. So can we be more creative in our approach? But again, this is a very progressive approach to managing talent that we sometimes struggle with overall in the public service at this stage.
Well, Zamir, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us on this, you know, very, very difficult and very, very complex issue. We just heard from Zamir Zulkifli, a co-founder of Teach for Malaysia.
Yeah, and we have some messages in relation to some of the stories we've been talking about today. First up, about the Semenyi elections, and it comes from Siti, who says that Malaysian politics still revolves around race, as simple as that. The reason Pakatan won was due to some suburban Malays voting against the UMNO. Pakatan only won 30% of Malay votes in the last GE. The recent election showed that they're winning less. It's simple math. As Dr. Oh implicitly said, the only way Pakatan can win the next GE is through gerrymandering. But I don't think that is necessarily what he would have meant. What he meant was that I think if we follow the current delineation, it would still go back to UMNO.
Absolutely. You know, of course, we've got a whole bunch of other messages, I guess, more, you know, in response to the Semenya discussion as well.
Yep. So Amin says, Pakatan needs to reactivate the Jabatan Penerangan to counter lies and slanders created by the opposition. Sorry, that came from Ideal.
All right.
And then the next message here, also about Semenya elections, and it comes from Ryan, who says that I believe one of the reasons Pakatan lost the by-election is because of social media. They allowed Barisan Nasional's army of cyber troopers to control the political narrative. For example, how Pakatan is dysfunctional, how they're not looking after the Malays. After BN's defeat, they have amplified their online presence with thousands of cyber troopers commenting on various social media. While Pakatan has done nothing to neutralize or refute Barisan's attacks. Repeat a lie enough times and it becomes the truth. There are 17 million Facebook users in Malaysia, and Pakatan cannot simply afford to ignore Barisan's online blitz, especially since they are mostly baseless accusations and half-truths.
Well, I think, you know, what's fascinating about some of the messages that we've been getting from our listeners, and thank you very much for sending those in through our WhatsApp service. You know, I think, you know, looking back at, you know, the discussion about, you know, just even teachers, we've spoken about the, I guess, economic needs of the B40. We spoke earlier about the Belanjawan Coup Guide,
yep,
on how people are really struggling from month to month to really make sense of this. And, you know, when you have a by-election, sometimes it is a very particular expression to what they're responding to. And I think some of the topics that we've covered, you know, covering the education system, covering the economy, it reflects in these moments. And as we spoke to Dr. Oh Yee San and Professor James Chin, looking at the next by-election as well as another opportunity for the electorate to express some of their issues and concerns, it's going to be fascinating to see how the respective stakeholders, whether it's in the federal coalition or the opposition, as to how they actually navigate that particular, you know, by-election.
So for Semenya, I think I thought what was interesting was the fact that during the campaign trail, what Pakatan essentially did was to bring up the issues that happened with PAS and the issues that were surrounding Najib, for example. And local voters felt that, hey, you're not solving my problems.
Yeah.
Why are you talking about these problems that, well, are in the news? Yes, you have to talk about them. Yes, but then, you know, you're not solving what I need, what I feel that is most important. So
there is that slight disconnect, isn't
there? I think at the moment, that's what they cannot do yet. So hopefully in the near future, if they do manage to solve the bigger problems, that they'll be able to provide that counter-narrative.
All right, 7:28 p.m., folks. Now, just after the 7:30 news, a new entertainment segment, Skip Intro is what it's called. It premieres after the 7:30 news alongside Lee Chui Lin, Ian McNally, and Bahe Yusof. So after the 7:30 news, it's Skip Intro, the Evening Edition's new entertainment segment. Stay tuned for that. It's BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.